The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted today to be able to speak to Tariq Fidel of Fidel Partners, a leading brand compliance, rights, and royalty management software platform. So welcome, Tariq.
Thank you, Paul. Great to be here.
Big congrats on today's inline trading update. Before we sort of dig into the details, I don't suppose we can spend a bit of time just running through some of the software. So let's just hypothetically sort of pretend that I am a big global toy maker with perhaps iconic brands such as, I don't know, Peppa Pig and Monopoly and Transformers, etc. And I license out those brands to other third parties and collect royalties. Also, I may, you know, license in other brands for my own particular games. Plus, I have sort of images that I want to sort of publish around the web to be consistent. How can the company actually help me and give me what sort of benefits does the company offer me?
Fantastic question. And interestingly enough, the toy company that you selected is actually one of our clients.
Oh, okay.
So we spend a lot of time in this space, in the media and entertainment, and the licensing space in particular, as a company. And so some of the work that we've done for Hasbro in this case, is we've deployed our intellectual property management solutions. One of our main product offerings is called the IP management suite of products. And it allows companies such as Hasbro and Marvel and Marvel's parent company to manage their licensing agreements. And licensing agreements can formulate and represent both outbound licensing, where you, as in this case Hasbro, for instance, are expecting royalty revenues to be coming in from licensees. And those licensees can be merchandise licensees, so people making apparel, t-shirts, hats with, let's say, the Transformers on them, cups and you know, party goods and what have you, and video games.
Yeah. And a film, I think, was a Transformers film, wasn't there?
And the film, exactly. And so the film usually ends up being in the studio businesses, but it drives so much merchandise licensing opportunities for these brands. And so what our software does is it allows, in a cloud fashion, allows the team at Hasbro and other places to manage the licensing agreements with their licensees, and there's usually thousands of them. But then also on the backside of that agreement, manage all of the incoming royalties that are being reported by these licensees. And so if you look at, for instance, Hasbro's business, Hasbro does a little under $500 million in licensing revenue annually in terms of income. And that represents a significant portion of their income. And our software will process all of those inbound royalties. More often than not, it's done on a quarterly basis, where the licensees will come and submit their royalty reports and all their sales reports through a portal that's powered by our software as well. And then it goes through complex accounting rules and eventually makes it into their financial ERP system. In their case, they run an SAP system. So our system will do all of the complex accounting, has the visibility into the contractual agreements, what royalty rates are being used, is there any tiering involved, is there any special rate because there's a movie that's coming out, pre-movie or post-movie, you have to pay an incremental fee because the licensor, in this case Hasbro, is driving more sales because they released a new movie. So there's a lot of complicated scenarios that you can model in our tool that then get taken into account in the actual royalty calculation process.
And what would be the typical sort of ROE on it? I mean, if I was, say, Hasbro, and I mean, this is hugely complex, got $500 million of revenue coming in just on the royalties. Presumably, this was going to save me a lot of manpower and productivity, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I think the key drivers for such a solution, and we are a very unique enterprise deployment solution because we can scale to multiple users, multiple departments, multiple countries, multiple languages, multi-currency, all on one cloud system. And there's barely any vendors in this space that have these types of enterprise scale capabilities.
Yeah.
And so when you think of the type of deployments that we undertake and with this type of software, it's usually across different business units, across different territories, across different lines of licensing types, And then the other unique value for us is that we can not only manage the inbound royalties, but we can also manage the outbound royalties. So case in point, for instance, Hasbro is also a very large licensee of Marvel and Disney and others, because they're also a toy manufacturer, in addition to being a media conglomerate. And so they'll produce Disney toys, and they'll sell them in retail, etc. And so they will owe a royalty fee on a quarterly basis based on their agreements with Disney. And so that's the other flip side of the coin, is that we're very uniquely positioned to be able to manage both inbound licensing and outbound royalty payments, as well as outbound licensing and inbound royalty payments on a single platform in the cloud.
Yeah. Well, that certainly sounds as though once you get embedded into a big client like that, they're not going to get rid of it because you're saving them a ton of money. Now, just on the other side of the business, the sort of the image rights, the sort of digital sort of like, you know, marketing, et cetera. If you're a L'Oreal or a Pepsi or a Coke or somebody like that, and obviously you want to have those, you want to have that as images perfect everywhere across all social media, television, digital, web, et cetera. How does the business help you, you know, help those clients do that, to keep that consistency across the whole world?
So we brought to market a secondary product offering called Brand Vision. And Brand Vision takes the perspective of working with brand managers and digital asset managers within these large multinational brands. In particular, a lot of the brands that sell to consumers, so the B2C, you know, consumer model, where they spend a lot of time, energy, and money on creating large marketing and advertising campaigns. And they'll use high-end photography, they'll use high-end models and athletes and movie stars and what have you, and musicians in their ads. So when you think of all of the underlying infrastructure required to actually manage that content that's being produced, and then also manage all of the usage rights for that content. So if you take an image, a very simple image, and you think about all the different releases and rights that correlate to that image, they're all coming off of agreements that the brand or their agency has to sign on behalf of the brand for usage rights. So things such as the photographer may allow you to use the image on social media, but not on print. They may allow you to use it in the US, but not in Europe, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, the larger the talent profile, the more restrictive the rights. And so what we've brought to the market is an ability under Brand Vision to allow these brand managers to, one, manage all the content itself, the production content that's being generated, be able to search it really quickly, use AI-based visual search algorithms for both images and video to find the exact content that you want, and then to make it available to all of the brands and brand managers and agencies securely in a cloud fashion around the world, so that they can reuse that content and not have to recreate it every single time. And then introspect all of the rights. And so you can say, for instance, I'd like to do a marketing campaign for this particular beauty product if I'm L'Oreal, or if I'm Coca-Cola for this particular set of drinks, or potato chips, or what have you, across the following regions within this time frame on all of these marketing mediums. And the system, in a Google-esque-like approach, would very quickly return what we call the red, green, yellow light scenarios of what's allowable, what's not allowable, what's allowable with exceptions, so that you know that when you're doing your campaigns, you actually do or don't have rights to the content. And then the third leg of that stool, which we recently released, is a content tracking and policing system. And so we've also leveraged our AI-based matching and crawling algorithms to be able to identify images and video for that brand on social media, on websites, on partner sites, e-commerce sites, et cetera, wherever that content is appearing, and let them know prior to expiration that this content is still either relevant or expiring or has already expired and needs to be removed. Because a lot of the brands that we're working with in the Brand Vision context are coming to us telling us that they're having to deal with cease and desist letters, they're having to deal with copyright infringement letters. And I could honestly say that I have yet to meet a brand that's actually misused content willingly or deliberately. It's just the fact that they just don't know that that content is expired and it's just floating somewhere out there on the ether. And our job is to not only manage that content and its rights, but also police and track where it is so that we can protect that brand before someone else gets to it.
And what are the sort of the synergies and cross-selling benefits then to a particular client of taking, say, both of those packages? I mean, how does it work together?
Yeah, so the core essence of the technology started with our proprietary rights modeling. And we applied the rights engine initially to consumer products licensing and worked with some of the world's largest licensors. And so when you think of the number of contracts and royalties that we actually end up processing, we're processing north of $5.5 billion worth of incoming royalties, which makes up a very significant percentage of the global royalty marketplace, our engines. And then we use that same engine to initially build out brand vision. And we applied it to the context of marketing content and where there was basic licensing, needs, not as heavy on the royalty side, but complex on the actual usage rights of the marketing content. And we created a whole new industry around marketing digital rights management, because before our solution, there was a bunch of Excel spreadsheets and a whole bunch of media agencies that do this manually for customers. And it could take a brand like Coca-Cola, for instance, or L'Oreal, weeks before they can get their rights cleared to use something.
Gotcha. And just between the sort of two divisions, which ones are sort of the highest growth and which ones are sort of like, high recurring revenue streams and sort of like, being there for high retention rates? Can you just talk through the sort of characteristics of both?
Sure, absolutely. So the IP management suite was our flagship product, and we started developing that product line well over 12 years ago. When you think about its deployment, it's a combination of high subscription value on an annual basis. It's a multi-year term agreements, usually 3 to 5 years.
And what would be the value of a contract for 3 to 5 years?
So in the enterprise space, it's typically within the 300,000 plus range on an annual basis. But then it also carries with it implementation services. So we have a professional services organization, and we work also with partners where we work with the companies that are deploying the solution. And usually we're replacing legacy systems. So 25, 30 year old homegrown systems that are not supported anymore. And that does two things for the clients. One is it future proofs their licensing systems because we're now supporting them as opposed to an in-house team. And two, we're bringing to them newer business models that they could not actually execute on in the past. So I'll give you a quick example, and this is very relevant. Pearson Education is, the largest educational publisher. They've been running on our system since 2015. We've deployed in 7 regions around the world. We've replaced over 35 disparate systems in these 7 regions onto a single platform. And we pay thousands of authors. We process and pay thousands of authors their royalties. But when you think of the transformation that the educational publishing industry, for instance, is going through, they were going from a one-to-one relationship between an author, a product, which was typically a textbook, and then a retail channel. And you sold that book through university libraries or through bookstores. And now that's all evolved to digital content that is coming from a multitude of authors and external content, be it music, video, voiceover, images, et cetera, that are now being put into content libraries. And so now you all of a sudden went from a one-to-one relationship to a many-to-many relationship of multiple authors, multiple content being deployed in digital content libraries that the professors and students are now subscribing to. Mm. So the royalty systems also have to understand the subscription economy and not just the trade execution economy that it used to in the past.
Yeah.
And those old systems that we're replacing didn't even have the constructs to understand what a subscription is and how do I take a $15 a month subscription from 100 students and then break it up to pay 10 authors because they picked the content from these 10 authors.
Yeah, it'd be a big spreadsheet with lots of pivot tables.
You have tons of spreadsheets, tons of people, and you'll never get to being able to calculate the and you're contractually obligated to pay your authors on time, right? So that's the leg of the stool. And so that's what we represent for these companies is that ability to understand not just the newer licensing models, but also the new distribution models that have evolved.
So what are the two growth rates between the two divisions? Are we talking sort of high single digits, low double digits in both, or what's the comparison?
Yeah, so where we're doubling down, I would say, in terms of the growth engine is really on the brand vision side of the equation. So if you think about it, our IP management flagship product is a very stable, steady, growing business. It not only brings in subscription revenue, but it also brings in professional services revenue. And some of these implementations can take upwards of 12 to 18 months, 2 years sometimes, depending on the scale and how wide the company is implementing the software. A great annuity-based business because you never really lose customers once they're live on that platform. Yeah. They are large, complex implementations, and usually once the system is working, no one wants to change it.
Yeah, the barriers to exit are enormous, aren't they, I guess?
That's right, exactly. Yeah. So, change them. Exactly. So that's sort of the revenue model, if you will, of IPM Suite. Slow and steady, recurring, annuity-based, and it just builds up. And we've become very accustomed to positioning more services and more support services, recurring support services on that platform, especially in the large enterprise blue chip accounts where they need staff to be dedicated, to their teams so that they can, deploy the software globally.
Yeah. Well, you do sound as though you're becoming like Google, a verb in royalty management there, Fidel,
That's right. I mean, I would say over 90% of our opportunities pre-IPO were inbound led because we built such a strong brand name in the publishing and consumer products licensing space.
Yeah.
So companies would seek us out. Now, on the brand vision side, it's a bit of a different model. So the brand vision side is a three-legged stool. We have a digital asset management system, a digital rights management system, and a content tracking system. And we've architected the software in a way where you can take any one of those three pillars independently and buy it from us, or you can buy the whole suite together. And that gives us the flexibility of working on top of partner digital asset management systems like Adobe, OpenText, Aprimo, et cetera, where companies have already invested in their digital asset management side. Mm. The interesting thing about that space, the digital asset management space, is that it's very fast growing. There's lots of companies out there that still don't have digital asset management systems and are relying on systems like Box and Dropbox to just do file collaboration. And the market itself, according to the analysts, Forrester and Gartner, is fast growing and is going to be north of $15 billion, just the addressable market size of the digital asset management space over the next 7 to 10 years. So we're after a large space that continues to see new vendors entering the market. And we feel that we've built a very differentiating, I would say a better mousetrap, if you will, because we've integrated the digital asset management system natively with the rights management, as well as the content tracking. And so today, if you're a brand manager looking to manage your marketing assets, you can take any one of those three pillars from us, or you can take the whole suite from us through a subscription, and it's a fast deployable model. And so we have quite a bit of customers in the consumer packaged goods space. For instance, Coca-Cola just finished a rollout. We're in discussions right now with more companies that we haven't fully executed the contracts yet, so I won't be naming them, but we have over 8 deals that are in the pipeline. We just signed a deal with Sanofi on the pharmaceutical side with their over-the-counter division to manage all the rights for their marketing content for over-the-counter products out of the US. So we're picking up a lot of interest in the product offering. And I would say the last version of the software, we deploy a new version every quarter. We update the releases, etc. We announced the video tracking capability, and that's brought a lot of attention and inbound leads from brands, as you can imagine, that do tons of video production and want to track where those videos are and if those videos are expiring assets on YouTube, on TikTok, on Facebook, on Instagram, which we support, and make sure that they're in compliance or they get pulled off. Yeah. And so we brought a very sophisticated video matching algorithm to the market that really came to us from our acquisition of Image Data Systems here in London.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing that division is going to be swamped with business because with regenerative AI, actually, I mean, you just get all these sort of like algorithms creating its own sort of content from images they've basically sucked in from the air, from the web, scraping it. And then it's, they've got to make sure that they comply with the brand owner. So, yeah, you guys are going to be extremely busy. And if you've got software that can make sure that that all complies and is consistent, then, well done. Just in terms of your sort of IPO now, you obviously you listed in April, I think it was raising around about £8 million at 144p, et cetera. What were you planning to use the money for?
So we're already, you know, putting the money to good use as we had committed to the street. We are looking at two main areas of investment. One is sales and marketing. And so we've done all this growth over the last 8 to 10 years with just less than a handful of salespeople in the company. I would say something on average, like 2 salespeople. And so we pre-invested pre the IPO in hiring more salespeople. And then post the IPO, we went out and we hired a chief revenue officer for the company based out of New York. So the company is New York based with strong operations in London and Paris as well. And we've also hired sales management in the UK, in Germany, in France, as well as in the US. So that's one area that we're investing in. Another area that we're investing in is a lot more demand generation marketing. So content production, podcasts, webinars, events, etc. Mm-hmm. And we're putting together, we hired a head of demand gen at the team, on the team, who's now also putting together a team of lead generation specialists. So people that will create marketing sequences, they'll generate traffic, they'll send out case studies, they'll drive demand so that the sales reps can execute on it. And so we're well on our way accomplishing that. As a matter of fact, I'm in London this week. We had our first official sales summit at the company, I would say. Post IPO, we had 12 people in the room where we were, you know, doing product training, you know, sharing ideas on how do we go to market with the new product offerings, getting the reps ramped up on messaging, answering questions, price lists, et cetera. So we're, I would say, very well on our way in terms of really developing out the sales and marketing function in the company.
Yeah. And the culture's sort of like all coming together now, because obviously if you've brought a lot of good, high quality people into the business, just got to, it's gelling them and pointing them in the right direction, I guess.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're very big believers in company culture. Company culture comes first for us. And, you know, we have such a diverse and international team. So, you know, even just in the sales summit, we've had people from, you know, from the US, from multiple states, from the UK, from Germany, from France, from Lebanon, you know, all together in one room. And it was just beautiful to see. And, you know, the big emphasis is on how can we help each other succeed and how can we get the company to where, you know, we know when we can get it. And so that was a 3-day, you know, focused event. And I suspect we're just going to continue to do more of that moving forward.
Yeah. Well, it does seem to be working, you say, with the trading update. Do you want to say a few words in terms of how the business is tracking? Because I did notice in 2022, you had about 2/3 of your revenue, which was sort of like recurring and, you know, sort of like ongoing type of support business.
Yes. And so we've been making a concerted effort over the last 4 years to grow the recurring side of the revenue. And the recurring side of the revenue for us is both subscription licenses as well as support subscriptions. And so companies seek us out for our expertise in this space, not only for our products, but also for our people expertise. And so we're able to position and sell both recurring licenses and support for our software, especially for the IPM suite. So this year, in addition to working hard on getting the listing out the door in a pretty tough market, We also effectively have been flooring it on generating pipeline, you know, adding more people to the sales team, et cetera. And so we have a very solid line of sight for our 2023 forecasted revenues. We are H2 backloaded a little bit. We expect quite a bit of renewals, especially on the IP management suite that will continue to renew. And so I feel very comfortable with where we're headed this year and next year, to a point where we already have the sales team mainly focused on what we're achieving in 2024 as opposed to 2023. In my mind, you know, we always have to be 6 to 9 months ahead looking out in our forecasts. So that's going, you know, according to plan. And, you know, just even with the smaller sales team that we had pre-IPO, we generated a very healthy pipeline of opportunities. And this year, between the product sets of both Brand Vision and IPM, I expect to have between 8 to 10 net new accounts signed up across a multitude of industries.
Good. And how long do these customers stay on the platform? Is it sort of like years? Is it multiple years?
Yeah, especially with the IP management suite, it's an annuity. We look at it as an annuity for the next 20 to 30 years, basically. So hopefully by the time I retire, someone else will be taking over that business.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a platform, that's for sure. Now, alongside that strong organic growth with building up the sort of recurring revenue streams, is there any sort of M&A opportunities as well? Because, you know, you're becoming a bit of a category killer in this.
Great question. It's something I think about every week. You know, it's conversations that we have internally as well. We do believe there's opportunity for M&A. The question for us is going to be about timing. As you know, it's been about 3 months since we listed, and you know, we've put the infrastructure in place. We'd like to be active in the space, you know, in 2024 and beyond. But we also wanted to make sure that we have not only just the systems, but also the right executives and the people in the company where we can support not just one, but multiple M&A opportunities. And from an M&A perspective, there's a combination of, we always look at the world of how we can be an end-to-end solution provider to our clients. And we believe in that mentality. So one throat to choke, a client that's paying a lot of money, millions of dollars to a service provider, should expect to get as much service out of them. And so in that context, we look at what are the different pillars that are missing out of our platforms that we can plug something in, just like we plugged in, for instance, image data systems, and that became our digital asset management system, as well as our AI engine to find images and video. And so I think we can be very smart about doing one, technology type acquisitions that enhance the platform, but then also two, there's going to be probably be a couple of competitive based opportunities where we can also go in and buy additional revenue and buy additional accounts, if you will.
Good. Well, I mean, it seems like quite a niche market. So, you can really sort of scale up there. And I guess as soon as you put a pound of sort of revenue on the top line or a dollar of revenue, then it drops quite well down to the bottom line. I get you get a lot of scalability, don't you?
That's right. A lot of scale.
Yeah. And then sort of like just pushing the clock forward, and nobody will hold you to it, but sort of like, you know, what your vision is for sort of 5 years. Because I mean, I was just looking at the broker notes. I mean, they've got a price target of £2.60 on the shares. They're currently trading at just south of £1.50. But they've got a sort of like $14 million sort of revenue, just plus $14 million for this year. And then moving out in 2025 of about $22 million. Ultimately, how big can this business be?
So we think this business can be well north of $100 million.
Wow.
The question is, you know, how fast are we going to go try to hit that mark? And that's probably between a mix of organic and inorganic growth. I can tell you that we have an internal goal and slogan of 50 million in under 5 years. That's organic. And so anything we can do to enhance that, you know, through acquisitions and through partnerships, we're absolutely going to be looking at. But we're very bullish on the markets that we're serving. And as I mentioned, when you look at just the total addressable market for Brand Vision alone with the digital asset management and tracking, and the digital rights management, that market is completely underserved. It's growing fast. There's not a single multinational brand that's not doing digital marketing out there, and it's not running into problems with managing their content and, you know, managing their copyright compliance.
Yeah. Well, I'll say, I'll just highlight to investors, if you can hit the $100 million there, if you put us at a 5x revenue and you've got 20 million shares, I mean, you basically, well, that gets to sort of like 500 million divided by 20 million. I mean, that's the best part of what, 250 million compared to 30 million, or that's 30 million pounds. So yeah, significant upside, there's no doubt about it. Just in terms of news flow, you've got your interims presumably in September.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. That'll be something worth waiting for. Now, again, I just mentioned to investors, if you want to look to buy or are interested in buying shares, they're currently Reg S shares, which means that they're freely available on the on AJ Bell and Interactive Investor. But there's a restriction for US citizens in terms of the first 12 months since IPO. But that will sort of fall off. But yeah, the significant upside and a great growth opportunity there. So thanks very much, Tariq, for your time, and look forward in touching base again in September.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it, Paul. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.